Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 586, Science Faction, Dog Day Life, and a Clue to Naledi.
You know, a lot of times, I you send me the notes beforehand, and yeah. Usually they don't have this impromptu title. Fans, look behind the curtain every time Bobby reads off the title of an episode. Very rarely, usually you're catching me reacting to it on the spot. This is the first time in like 500 fucking episodes. I don't know what the fuck to do with what you just left. You took a shit on my comedic doorstep, Bobby, and I'm stomping it out right now.
Sounds like you're living a dog day life.
Damn, it was dog shit. God damn it.
And speaking of dog shit, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how you doing this afternoon?
I am doing fantastic, but that's actually kind of the problem. Basically, what you just told me is that this is an archaeology-heavy episode.
No.
I need
No, no. There's some physical anthropology in the second part, but the first part, no.
Listen, if you were to say paleontology, I mean, that is rich.
Yeah, there's some human paleontology, you're right, yeah.
Okay, that is rife for satire.
Good.
Oh, no. I really backed myself into a corner here.
Dear Anne, thank you. Audience, we are seeing our Patreon numbers ticking up, and we're really excited about that. So thank you, everybody who's decided to donate and decided to sponsor us, become a Patreon. I do think it's incredibly ironic that, a month or so ago, we had somebody who kind of like did the take my ball and go home because we weren't promoting ivermectin. Again, we're not sure what podcast they were listening to up till then that they thought we would, but we were, you know, not promoting ivermectin. So they said, we're leaving your Patreon. We can't handle your crazy liberal bias. And I just put one announcement about that on our regular main show, and we replaced that one Patreon with like six others. So thank you so much, crazy ivermectin guy, for essentially, I don't know, multiplying your contribution by six with your crazy ass ideas.
I think that's really more of an effect of the cult podcast effect. I'm looking at a lot of our relevant podcasts, and a lot of the other podcasts, the people who are top subscribers, are also subscribed to a lot of other Rooster Teeth products. So
that makes sense.
The first thing I'm getting from this is, one, we need to pitch to Rooster Teeth because we're practically in their stable. Two,
sure.
I wanted to comment more on what podcast this guy thought he was listening to. Because, yeah, we did hammer the ivermectin thing pretty hard, but you're right. Oh my God. I mean, Bobby has to edit out the I was in the United States Army. I served with people from all 50 states. I can say this, and it's predominantly the South and Texas. Like, let me just hint, hint. You Army infantry, mostly the South and Texas. So I can say these things. I have a Southern friend. I'm allowed to make fun of rural idiots.
I'm allowed to use the N-word. Not educated.
And the M-word, misinformation. That's our word. You have no right to use misinformation. Uh-oh. Hell no. Now, excuse me. Don't bleep me, but I'm going to drop 12 N-bombs right now. Not informed. Not informed. Not informed.
Let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
And because we have a lot of new fans from Rooster Teeth, if you guys are looking for another Dungeons & Dragons podcast, give Awful Neutral a listen. I am the Dungeon Master, and I take a group of comedians, friends of me and Bobby's, very funny people, to include Paige and Armando. They have been guests on two episodes. And we are a live play Dungeons & Dragons podcast. And if you're iffy about Dungeons & Dragons, but you like funny shit, give us a shot. If you like the humor of this show, we are infinitely funnier because we are not bound by trying to teach you something. You don't have to walk away with anything from Awful Neutral.
You said if you want to listen to another Dungeons & Dragons podcast, as if all the listeners are already listening to a Dungeons & Dragons podcast.
I am speaking to the number of fans who also are interested in Dungeons & Dragons podcast. By the way, I only bring this up because I looked at the relevant, it says, you know, people who subscribe to iTunes, and it says what other podcasts. One of the top podcasts we have in common is a Dungeons & Dragons podcast put on by Rooster Teeth. And I'm saying I haven't listened to that one, but I'm telling you, we're 100 times funnier.
I'm just going to say, go ahead and put this out there. Two Dungeons and Dragons podcasts don't make a right.
I have nothing, Poppy.
No, you don't. You have no defense of your of what
I
you're doing.
I rolled a one on my comeback check, Bobby. Like, I'm sorry. I'm a gamer. I actually have the perfect joke. Had I rolled the 20, you'd be hearing it right now.
Ironically, you rolled the 20 on the come on backed part, so.
That is actually a beast. It is the semen backed beast of Narlacc. And Bobby, you take this shit seriously. I don't laugh when you talk about penis. I mute my mic and laugh.
Literally every time. Every time you laugh.
That's completely different.
Yes, it is a little girlish. All right, so on to article number one. Article number one, Dog Day Life.
Oh my God, Bob, is this like an article that I'm going to be weeping at the end at? Like, oh my God, he just loves me so much.
Kind of. You're going to be weeping the same way you were weeping when we found out that gorillas don't actually speak sign language, and it ruined a lot of the ideas you had presupposed in your head as a kid.
They do speak Latin, though, and that I think that was the craziest part of the argument of that article.
For you, finding out that the mid-90s release Congo was not a documentary was a shocking reality check.
Dude, I mean, like, you say that, but I have seen you break educated people's fantasy bubble by letting them know that gorilla sign language, 100% bullshit. I wish that was your platform. Like, hey, everybody who feels good about Coco the gorilla, I'm here to shit on that parade. Also, Mother Teresa was a bitch.
That's my version of Focus on the Family. It's fucking make a gorilla shit talking 501c3.
You're doing like third grade assemblies. I actually hire some yo-yo guys to get the crowd warmed up, and then I jump in, tell them Coco's bullshit.
Well, for a lot of you guys listening, this is going to be one of those stories where you learn that you've actually been lied to about an animal's abilities for most of your life, similar to that gorilla sign language story.
So wait, like all those stories that I've heard. So like I'm guessing, so this is about dogs and
yes.
What can like dogs not actually detect cancer? So like every time like a woman's like, my dog identified breast cancer. You just have to assume, no, he didn't. He just likes big tits.
Well, first of all, that's always my assumption, but no, so you,
down,
they can. Well, I mean, if it's a dude dog, dudes are dudes, bro.
How many puppies could you feed on that? Only two. Okay. That's a little less than what I'm used to, said Rover.
Yeah, so we are going to be talking about dogs' ability to sniff things. Now, I want to be clear, they have been shown to be able to detect cancer, they can detect bombs, they can detect drugs, they can detect human remains, they can detect all of that stuff. But our question isn't, can they do it? It's how accurate they are, especially in times where you can't actually verify what the dog is saying. So we're going to be discussing an article that's published in Science right now, and you can go ahead and check it out. And it has a huge overlap to some of my own personal research interests. So I thought this was an incredibly interesting thing. I think it's almost a public service announcement to get out there in terms of the accuracy of these dogs' noses and what they can do, et cetera. But let's jump into it.
Are we doing this article because because, I mean, there have been countless articles about a drug dog who falsely identifies, you know, because
sure
he knows that my master wants to impound this car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, Bobby, is your car impounded right now? And is that why we're doing this article?
Not currently, but we'll see what the Border Patrol has to say a little bit later. But no, so...
Those pussies.
Dogs have been used for a long time. Obviously, we use hunting dogs to go track down animals. They're pretty good at that. We got smart after a while and realized, hey, they can actually hunt down people in the same way. We used them for that quite a bit.
Peanut butter.
We learned after a while that they can smell out other things like drugs or bombs, and we've used them for that. We learned later on that they can find human remains, and so we use them as search dogs. In my line of work, there's actually a subset of archaeologists and people who work with archaeologists who train dogs specifically to find not recent human remains, oftentimes ancient human remains. And sometimes there are success stories of dogs finding, you know, like 5,000-year-old burials that are 6 feet down, and they're able to smell it through the soil. It's quite impressive.
First off, when they find the bone, good luck getting it back from them, because that's just, you're just chasing a dog through the desert at that
point. Learned a lot from cartoons too. Yeah,
and then like not only that, but like, yeah, you have this ancient bone, but it's now covered in dog teeth marks.
Yes, yeah. Believe it or not, they don't actually let the dogs do the digging. The dogs are just alert.
Good luck stopping them.
Yeah. So that's one way to use dogs, and we use those in archaeology. And I actually had an encounter with an organization, the professional organization that does this for archaeology, on a project I was working on, and I get to watch them work and see how they do work. And let me just say, one, the dogs themselves are very impressive. They absolutely can find remains. They can even find ancient remains. And I have actually been part of training dogs to find ancient remains. I have done that with previous dogs that I have owned who have then found remains on sites I have been on. So I am not saying this does not work. In fact, I am saying it absolutely does work. However, something happened when I had an encounter with this particular group, and I won't name them, but I had an encounter with this particular group where they came out to a site I was working.
They're the worst.
They came out to a site I was working on to sniff around for human remains. And what I watched was what I can only describe as a horribly unscientific and unprofessional process. They were not blinded, meaning that each handler saw the handler and the dog before them go through an area. So if they see the dog go through and, you know, hit on a specific area, they now know the other dog hit on that area. They can give subliminal cues to that dog, even without even trying, get that dog to hit on that same area. So now they can go, look, we got like three hits. Look at it. And I was sitting back and watching, I went, no, you got one hit, and then two other people saw it, and it got replicated. And sure enough, they hit in places where there was no human bone. And they passed human bone we knew was there in certain instances. I know these dogs can find things, but I also know that there is an issue with bias, that the handlers are not scientifically trained for the most part. They believe themselves to be, but clearly they can't see their own biases. They don't have good experimental design. They've clearly never actually consulted like an actual research scientist to figure some of this stuff out.
Maybe the dogs are suffering from the Dunning-Kruger effect. They watched the video on being a bone dog. I'm like, oh yeah, I can do that. No problem. Arf, arf. And...
For the last time, Rex, get off Parler. I told you, you're going to give me bad ideas from there.
I'm not getting vaccinated. That's just what Bill Gates wants. Rex Gates.
Parvo is a myth. Perpetrated by the Chinese. So I am somebody who has seen both the absolute side that, yes, they can't do this, and the side that the people and organizations doing this almost universally lack the scientific training to be doing the jobs that they're doing.
Parvo is a myth. I'm going to be laughing about that tonight. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's I love that.
And there's issues with whether or not what they're doing is valid. Now, in my own research, when this was happening, this was almost 10 years ago, I started looking up the accuracy of dogs to detect even other things. Forget human remains. Things like bombs, drugs, guns, anything like that. And what I found was fucking shocking. I actually used this as an argument to the federal government when these people were going like, look, we got to do stuff with these places where the dogs hit. And I asked, okay, could you tell me what your dog's false positive percentage is? And they said, well, they never hit false positives. It's zero. And I was like, well, that's not true. I watched some of them miss things or hit other things. So I know they do. But can you tell me then, do you have special dogs or are they of the same caliber as, I don't know, a bomb sniffing dog? And they said, yeah, we have them to the same standards as bomb sniffing dogs. And I said, well, could you tell me what the false positive rate of a bomb sniffing dog is? And they said, it's zero. They never hit it. And I said, it's actually 80%. And of course, these people aren't researchers. They don't know shit. Be honest, they're mostly like pretty nutty ladies who just really love dogs and are like single for a reason. But like, they clearly had not done their research and they didn't understand what was going on. Now, when you say 80% false positives, think about what that means. That means the vast majority of the time a dog says there's a bomb there, there's not a bomb there. Now, it turns out that specifically with drug sniffing and bomb sniffing dogs, they're pretty good at not letting things go, meaning that they don't get a lot of false negatives. They're pretty good at catching things, but they're not good at discerning other things, and they get a lot of false positives.
I would like they don't know if you just were carrying ammonia in your car, ammonia nitrate.
Right. Now, if you're talking about somebody getting on an airplane, I'm kind of okay with that because, like, bombs are such a big deal on airplanes and we all kind of go to an airport with the understanding that we're going to get our shit searched. So if you get your shit searched, you know, a little bit extra because a dog hits on you, that's not ideal.
Dog hits on me. Damn it, Bobby. Take me back to college. I'm a married man, Bobby. Listen, I would love to be out banging dogs like I was in my 20s. All right.
You sound like a guy who's never met McGruff in a bathhouse. There's nothing under that trench coat.
McGruff has dropped into my, you know, hey, keep it between you. Don't let the missus know. But McGruff, the crime dog, has dropped into my DMs lately.
Hello, Damien. You up? Ruff and fighting crime?
Take a bite out of this dick.
He's a cop. There's a hegemonic power difference between... What am I going to do? Like, watch, if I say no, there's going to be a cop car waiting in front of my house, tailing me everywhere I go.
So, again, in a situation where we're trying to figure out if there's bombs in an airport, that is not as big a deal. We've already kind of consented to search. Where that starts being a problem is things like drug-sniffing dogs. Because the way it works is... A police officer can't just search your car without probable cause. You have a Fourth Amendment right to privacy, and they can't do that without a warrant or you violating some other law. But what they can do is run a dog around your car, and if the dog gives its signal that it's hitting off, that it smells something, then they're allowed to search your car because that's considered probable cause. Well, how is that probable cause if it has an 80% false positive ratio? That means you're more likely to be wrong about that person having drugs than you are right about it. That is not probable. That is literally an improbable cause by definition.
And it's actually a really big, like, dogs, false narc-ass cops. Like, basically, I love dogs, but narc-ass dogs, dogs that are sicked on people, and narc-ass dogs put people away. Little bit of a problem with them. But that's actually a really big cause for civil asset forfeiture, is like a dog false marked my car, cop searched it, found a reason. I'm from California. They know I'm not going to come back here to fight it. Long story short, cop stole my car. Dog's the reason.
Yeah, and so in that case, you're literally depriving people of their civil liberties based on this thing we know has an 80% false positive ratio. So that is a problem right there. Also, we know these dogs have biases. Like I said before, they, and you mentioned, they are influenced by their handlers. And if their handler thinks something is there, as I witnessed in the desert when I had like three dogs hit on something that was bedrock and no bone whatsoever, that dog, if that handler sees something about the car and thinks, oh man, they're black guys, they must have drugs, then that dog is going to pick up on that handler and be more likely to alert when they're and give a false positive.
Now, for all of you defending cops out there, imagine what you know of cops now. Be honest. You're a black guy, you're three black friends traveling across the country, heading back to a college that in the South, let's say. You have California license plates, and you're driving through Texas. All of a sudden, a Texas cop, let's say a Texas sheriff, he has the round hat, pulls you over, and the drug dog is there. You know there are no drugs in the car. What are the odds that that drug dog will signal that there's something up with this car?
Yes. So there's that. But now let's take it a step further, which is that dogs are now used to convict people of crimes like murders without additional evidence.
How do you even get a dog on the stand? Like, how is this testimony admissible?
One of the problems is actually that they're not allowed, they can't be put on the stand, and so you can't exactly cross-examine them if you're the defense. But there are examples, and this particular article, again, I advise you, go to Science Mag and go check this out. There are instances, including one of a guy who, he went camping with his son disappeared, and then, you know, he got accused of killing him, even though there was no evidence that he killed him, and the dogs hinted that there was the smell of decomposition in his truck. They didn't find the body on him. There was no other evidence that he did anything, but the dog testimony is what convicted him. There are quite a few cases. They actually go over like four or five cases that are like this in the story. And it's kind of scary because what we're essentially saying is if the dog hit, then we're assuming it's right. And that assumption leads us to the idea that there was evidence, i.e. a decomposing body in this guy's truck. So therefore he's guilty. But if you know they have an 80% false positive ratio, then what you should be saying is that doesn't mean jack shit.
This is ridiculous because we hear all the time, like, listen, we know the billionaire's son was the last person to have seen this missing girl and they had a very abusive relationship, but there's just not enough evidence to convict. Meanwhile, regular person, yeah, the dog smelled something funny in the car, so we're going to put you away for life.
Yeah, and it is a thing where, like, listen, if a kid goes missing, should you follow a dog trail on, like, the scent of that kid? Absolutely. But if the dog trail leads you someplace and there's no other evidence and that guy has an alibi that he was 300 miles away, then that is not evidence enough to convict that person. It should be used as a way, how can we find it? Hey, look, that dog has since passed, but when I used to have that dog out that had been trained to find human remains, you know, I would take her out and she would be on an archaeology site with me and she would signal.
And then I could look there and be like, oh shit, yeah, look, there's little small pieces of human bone here, a little small piece of bone or whatever. So then I had confirmation. But it's not like if I was filling out an archaeology form on a specific site, I would put that there is human bone just because the dog signaled, because I knew about the false positive ratios. And the consequences here are vastly different. We're talking about putting people in jail, sometimes for long periods of time, and they don't seem to have that same discretion. And I think it's because people are not informed about the number of false positives and the incredibly high ratio of false positives when it comes to sniffing dogs. This doesn't mean they're bad at it. Like we said, there are biases that come into account, the bias of the trainer, the bias of what is expected of the dog. Certain things throw off the dog's senses a lot. Heat can be one of them. Enough heat can really make it difficult for a dog to smell things. So, like, there are things that complicate the matter, but the fact of the matter is we're taking this as if it's DNA, and it's, like, not even close to blood splatter analysis. Like, we're not even close.
When you said that dogs will find human bones based on signals given from humans, it's like you were reading the DMs I got from McGruff.
Oh, Damien, I think you know this story, but this is a true story, by the way. So you might wonder, how do you train a dog to find human remains? Well, you have to have...
kill a lot of people around a dog. Yeah.
No, you have to have human remains, and then you there's a pretty set training process once you have the actual materials, but you actually have to have human remains, and you can just buy human remains, you know, like online. And so I did that. This was like 10 years ago. So I did that, and I was training this dog. It also happened to be when I was single, and ended up meeting a girl. I decided to take her out on a date, and like totally accidentally just left a bag of human bones on the front passenger seat of my car when I went to pick her up, and like did the gentlemanly open the door thing for her, and then we had like a very like what's that moment. Like, it's an interesting first date when you open the door, when the guy opens the door for you and there's just literally a bag of human bones in the seat you're about to sit in.
Okay, two questions. First off, why did you want her to find the bones? Because I know you, Bobby. And that's a rookie mistake. Two, did you get some that night?
Didn't want her to find the bones. It was a complete accident. It actually happened because I didn't realize the bones were there. I moved a binder I had on top of them so that she could sit there without realizing the bones were underneath there. So I just moved the binder, leaving the bones. And then secondly, yes, she got my human bone, if that's what you're asking.
Great. Did you think she would have known they were human bones just by looking at them? Like, first off, what was her level? What was her field of expertise? Was it a complete femur? Which she was like, that is a human femur. What is that?
No, it was some like ribs and stuff. No, she was an attorney, and she looked at me and went, because there were just bones on the seat. And I was like, oh, sorry. I mean, like, I kind of fucked up because I was like, oh, sorry, those are my human bones. And I was like, I'm an archaeologist. It's for dog shit. Listen, just get in the car. I'm fine.
Have you ever seen like those like movies where somebody throws bones and then like is like gets in touch with spirits? I do that. Some people do tarot.
So before I close that out, I just wanted to get this out there because I think it's incredibly important as part of scientific literacy and civilian literacy for you to be informed about these things so that when issues like laws come up and you get to vote on them, you can understand the underlying science behind these important issues, which some people, frankly, are sitting in an 8x10 cell for. So understanding this is important to understanding both your rights as a citizen and the rights of other people as we participate in democracy and pass laws and whatnot. Just remember, dogs are great. They're really good at finding stuff. They can find cancer. They can find drugs. They can find bombs. They can find human remains. But they are also wrong a fuck ton, especially false positives as opposed to false negatives.
I back the badge, Bobby. I always give benefit of the doubt to the dog. I back the collar.
The badged collar. So dogs are great, but they are not foolproof. And keep that in mind before huge decisions are made based on what they are doing. All right, on article number two, a new clue to Naledi.
A new clue to Naledi. Now, I know that Homo Naledi was a stage in our collective Pokemon evolution.
No, not a stage in our evolution, because it's a total side branch. But yes, it is a hominid. We actually covered the discovery of this hominid on this very show, because it was discovered in 2013, published in 2015. We covered it then. And it has a super interesting backstory. So before we get into the new discoveries, I want to remind everybody who's heard before or inform people who haven't been listening to us that long about Homo naledi, because it is such a fucking interesting hominid, probably one of the most interesting ones out there. It is totally mysterious and unexplained. So Homo naledi is known from a single cave network called the Rising Star Cave in South Africa. This single cave network has evidence of thousands of bones belonging to at least 15 or 16 individuals of this species. And there are two things that are really weird about it. Number one is what it is, and number two is where it is. What it is a bizarre mixture of old hominids and new hominids. This thing is only 300,000 years old. Our own species was around in North Africa at that time. So this shared the landscape of Africa with us. I mean, we might not have overlapped in exact geographic location, but we were on the planet at the same time. This thing has a brain that's like the size of a chimp's, or barely bigger. It's just barely bigger than Australopithecine's brain. However, the brain is organized more like a modern Homo, so it's like maybe the brain shrank, but then it has really weird features where it has hands and a body style that's more attuned to climbing trees, which are things that we see all the way back in like early Australopithecines, 4 million years ago. This is 300,000 years ago. So it's got a small brain, but an advanced brain organization. It looks like it's a climbing hominid living in trees, but its hands also seem to be able to possibly make stone tools. We haven't found them yet, but they seem to have the characteristics of something that can make stone tools. It's living, again, it's weird, out of nowhere, this weird small-brained, modern, semi-modern hominid in one cave system in South Africa, and the cave system itself is crazy. The cave is incredibly inaccessible. The first chamber that was found that had these in it, you had to go like 240 feet into a cave, then like 30 feet down a straight drop, of which the opening went down to like 7 inches at one point, and then another like 30 feet laterally before you made it to the cave system. In fact, it was such an inaccessible place, the original fossils were discovered by just cave spelunkers who came out and showed a paleoanthropologist, and he had to assemble a specialized team of human anthropologists to go down and collect them that he called the underground astronauts. And they were all women, all incredibly small, skinny, and flexible because they had to go through these super narrow, tiny, crazy passages that should not be accessible. Keep in mind, in what is pitch black darkness, which 300,000 years ago, you would have no way to light.
Yes, it is true. Russia has a team of gymnastic archaeologists ready at call. If you break ankle, you are told, hey, you are getting fat and old. What, do you want to make babies? Like, disgusting.
It's just so weird because everything like this creature pretty much died out like 1.5 to 2 million years ago in Africa, except for this one creature in this one place. And we don't know what its lineage is. We don't know where it came from. We don't know how it got there. We don't know if it was all over Africa and we don't have the remains, or it was just in this one place in South Africa. It's incredibly interesting. By the way, they do have some of the inner ear bones, which, as we've covered on this show before, we discovered a few years ago, inner ear bones tend to hold like hundreds of times the amount of DNA as regular bones. So we might, at 300,000 years, we might at some point get DNA from this creature, which is really interesting.
Yes. Ideal archaeology body type is under 100 pounds, female, and unable to breathe.
So what is the story this week? It turns out that they found a new skull in that same cave network of a naledi, and this is of a child. Making it even more interesting, this skull seemed to be placed on a shelf within the cave network that was, you know, elevated from the ground and recessed in from the wall, which we're still not sure how these creatures got in there. It doesn't seem feasible that they could have climbed in there. This incredibly tough climb in pitch blackness, this doesn't seem feasible. No other entrance has been found to the location. However, the other possibilities were either the bones got washed in there through some kind of hydraulic activity, or a predator dragged them in there. Well, a predator sure as fuck didn't isolate this one skull and place it carefully on a little shelf within there. This is clearly the actions of hominids. So while I don't think the whole hydrology hypothesis or animal hypothesis was super well accepted before, this absolutely puts that to rest. And what it shows is some kind of semblance of funerary rites to some extent. I mean, you're taking a symbolic thing, this child's skull, and putting it in a place of reverence, you know, this like little niche, this shelf niche cut out inside of this cave network. It is really interesting. We don't know if these creatures lived in here or just used it to dispose of their dead as some kind of funerary rite. And so maybe they didn't need a lot of light. It was just something you went and you did every once in a while, and they had good night vision or something. Who knows? It is probably, not only to say probably, it is the most interesting hominid I have ever studied. Really, really cool and bizarre that it's isolated to literally one cave, not even like one place or one fucking cave system.
Do they have access to fire or not?
We don't know. We do know that
maybe because all those bones could have just been smoke inhalation in a small cavern.
Well, at that time, there certainly was hominids wielding fire. We know that, the early, what we now might call Bodoensis in Eurasia had fire. We know even Erectus back long before that had fire because it was in parts of northern Asia, specifically northern China, that were too cold basically for it to live without fire. And we have fire-hardened spear points at 500K and stuff. So it's not that fire wasn't around or being controlled by hominids at that time. We just have no evidence that this hominid did it, and that would be like quite an impressive tool suite for something of that time. But we don't know. Again, we don't know.
To the time machine.
Yeah, I would love to go see what's going on with them and see where they came from, where they descended from. I mean, there are some hypotheses that actually, because of their mixture of old and new traits, someone's like, actually, you know what I think happened? I think like a regular homo, like a homo erectus or something, I think it like fucked an Australopithecus, and that's the only way this could happen. And it also kind of like, it also like explains why we don't see a lineage leading up to this thing. It'd be like, oh, it's just a hybrid that came out and then, you know, started a new species.
Is it possible they fucked a previous time traveler? He went native and was seduced by the culture and a sweet, sweet piece of, you know what, not important, but
yes, I believe you're speaking of Dr. Who Dis.
New era, Who Dis. That's Dr. Who Dis. That is a shirt.
Let's cave fire and chill. Thank you, audience, for coming back to Science Faction 586, where you learned all about a dog day life and how Homo Naledi has given us some new secrets. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 587.
Remember, Davian, only you can eat this ass.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.